Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel. You're listening to The Jewish Truth Bomb with Lenny Goldberg.
Hey, this is Lenny Goldberg, and thanks for joining me today. Every Shabbat, we have a prayer in our Sidurim, Achinu Kol Beit Yisrael, Anutanim, Bitzarah B'Shviya. And that's a special prayer for our Jewish brothers who are suffering or are captive. We say that every single Shabbat, we're praying for individual Jews all over the world because we are guarantors for one another and we'll do whatever we can for them. But there are certain things we don't do. If we're in the middle of a war of survival, you don't make the subject of the hostages into a political campaign, and by doing so, you hurt the IDF's ability to operate. You don't hear from the media, from the left, the message about wiping out the Hamas. You just hear about bring them home. That's the focus. Bring them home. And the thing is, when the left launches their campaign for the hostages, what they're really doing is they're virtue signaling with their signs and their protests and their songs. It's like they're saying, look at us. See how ethical we are. Look how much we care about the hostages. But they're not really doing anything to free the hostages. It's more about promoting this image of themselves as these great humanitarians than really accomplishing anything tangible. You don't abandon the security of your country and jeopardize its very existence for the sake of pidyon shvuim, for the sake of freeing hostages. In the same way, you don't put your country at risk in order to prevent soldiers getting hurt in the battlefield. That is, you don't say, well, we can't go to war because soldiers are going to get hurt. So let's not go to war and we'll lose the country as long as nobody gets hurt. And so the major point is this. You don't make the narrative of the war into a story about the private pain. The private pain of the families and the individual sorrow, that isn't what the conversation is supposed to be about in the public sphere anyway. Not at a time when we're fighting for our lives as a nation. Any public campaign is supposed to be about one thing. That's wiping out the Hamas, about restoring Jewish pride, and about bringing victory. That's what the focus should be, and not the personal suffering that's going on in these poor families. And if you do focus on the hostages, then you stress that the abduction of the hostages, this is something that concerns the nation as a whole, and you don't treat it as an individual personal matter. Over 200 Israelis were abducted by these Nazi Amalekites. That's a national disgrace that affects all of us. And so we have to go to war against these Amalekites, like King David and his men went to war when Amalek raided his camp in Siklag, and they took the Jewish families hostage. What did David and his men do? They went after them and they slaughtered them. And so the liberation of the hostages, it has to be part of an overall national victory. It's a national issue. That's how the campaign for the hostages is supposed to be. Because you can't cut it off from the national side of things. And last week we celebrated a holiday which reflects this very concept. On Passover, you have two Yom Tovs. The first day of Passover and the last day of Passover. The first day of Passover, we celebrate our freedom from bondage. We were released from captivity. But the seventh day is the more joyous occasion. Why? Because that celebrated the drowning of the Egyptians at the Red Sea. It's only on the seventh day of Passover, when the enemy was wiped out, then we sing, Az Yashir Moshe. On the first day of Passover, when we left Egypt, we weren't on the spiritual level to sing. Only on the seventh day. Why is that? So Rabbi Moshe Tsuriel of blessed memory explains that on the first day, we were freed from bondage. We left as a free people. But right after that, we have the Egyptians coming after us, trying to kill us. And so if our tormentors aren't wiped out, if we don't see vengeance meted out to them, then our salvation isn't complete. Why? Well, first of all, they have it coming to them. We want them to get their just rewards after what they did to us. And also, just simply speaking, if they're still around to torment us, then obviously our salvation isn't complete. That's why the seventh day of Passover is greater than the first day. When the Egyptians drowned, that was a day of great joy. And so if the hostages are freed, okay, that's great for them. But what about tomorrow? Our enemy is still alive to keep tormenting us. So what have we accomplished? That's why the seventh day of Passover is so great. We saw the enemy wiped out. That's what we want. We want the Hamas, we want the jihadists to be wiped out so it won't happen again. That's complete joy. See, the problem is that in this generation, we've been educated to think that the most important thing is to be saved from those who hate us. That's the goal, to be saved, to make sure that the bad guy doesn't kill us. And when the evil is wiped out, when we kill the bad guy, we're not supposed to be too happy about it. Because after all, you know, we're merciful types. We're Jews. We're B'nai Rachamim. We're a people of compassion and all that. And this is a distortion that's penetrated into our Jewish culture, but it's a foreign concept. It's from the West. It originates from Christian doctrine. There's nothing Jewish about that kind of thinking. And so we have to return to our Jewish sources. We have to see what the sages said about vengeance, what they said about the fall of our enemy. Take a look at Psalms 149, verse 7. We say it every single day in our prayers. La'asot nekama b'goyim, to execute vengeance against the nations. Tokachot b'lumim, to chastise the nations, to bind their kings with chains and their nobles with fetters of iron. La'asot behem mishpat, to punish them. That's what King David thinks anyway in Psalms 149. And so you see, it's not a matter of we want to take away their guns so they can't attack us anymore. It's not a matter of disarming them. We want nikama. We want vengeance. And getting back to the seventh day of Passover, which commemorates the drowning of the Egyptians, it says in the Mechilta, Parshat Bishalach, that God punished the Egyptians measure for measure. They wanted to drown us in the water, so we drown them in the water. And we have a special song we sing every morning, Az Yashir Moshe, Shirat Hayam, the Song of the Sea. And how does that song begin? Vayar Yisrael et yad gedola asher asa Hashem b'Mitzrayim. And Israel saw God's mighty hand against Egypt. Vayaru ha'am v'yaminu b'am b'Hashem u'v'Moshe avdo. When they saw that God did that to the Egyptians at the Red Sea, then they believed in Hashem and his servant Moses. So the Midrash asks, what did the Jews see at the Red Sea that made them believe in God? I mean, what was so special about it? They saw the 10 plagues. Wasn't that enough to make them believe in God? So the great sage, the Netziv, he says, what did they see? They saw how their tormentors died a horrible death. They saw the amazing hashkacha, the divine supervision, the divine providence, because each Egyptian received his own special personal treatment. As it says in the Song of the Sea, it says that the Egyptians sank like lead, ke'oferet. In another verse it says, they sunk like a stone, yodu ke'evin. And yet in another verse it says, they were thrashed about like straw. So how is that? Was it like lead? Was it like stone? Was it like straw? And the answer is, the ones who were least cruel to the Jews, their death wasn't as torturous, they sank like lead. The ones who were worse than them, they went down like stones. And the real evil ones were thrashed around like straw. That is, they almost drowned, they'd come up for some air, they'd be pushed down into the water again, they almost drowned, they come back again for air, come back down. In other words, a very painful, torturous kind of death. And that's what the people saw, which made them, v'yaminu b'Hashem u'moshe avdo, that's what made them believe in God. And so for us, the vengeance against the enemy is greater than the salvation from him. Why? Why is that? Because through the vengeance, you get Kiddush Hashem. You see the sanctification of God's name. If you're simply saved, okay, you got saved, wonderful. That's beneficial for the particular individual who was saved. But that's a personal thing. And let's say the entire Jewish people are saved from some tragedy. That's also a personal salvation for each individual. Baruch Hashem, we didn't get wiped out. But when revenge is taken on the Hamas and your tormentor, that is advertised to the world. It's a Kiddush Hashem. You sanctify God's name because it proves Yesh Din, Yesh Dayan. There is a judge in heaven. There is a reward for the righteous. And evil doesn't pay. There is a God. And that's infinitely more important than the personal benefit of being freed or saved. Moshe Feiglin tells a story that when he was in the United States visiting, he was in Chicago, and the woman who hosted him, she told him that she never wore her Jewish star outside. She always kept it covered. She was embarrassed, afraid, whatever. And then after the Six-Day War, when Israel defeated the Arab nations, it was the first time that she wore her Jewish star out. You see, suddenly there was Jewish pride. That's how it was for Jews worldwide. after the Six-Day War. There was a spirit of holiness in Kiddush Hashem in the air after that war. There was Jewish pride. How do you create that Jewish pride? You know how? When the television news is broadcasting to all the world thousands of dead Egyptian soldiers strewn across the Sinai Desert, when you see that, the Jew can take out his Jewish star, the Jew could take his baseball cap off and wear his yarmulke again. That's how you do it. So the wiping out of our enemies, of the enemies of God, against those who raise their hands against Jewish people, that's even more important than being safe from the enemy. And that's why the seventh day of Passover is greater than the first day, is more joyous than the first day. And that's why the freeing of the hostages in Gaza is of less importance than the wiping out of those who abducted them. Because think about it, if the hostages are freed, but we don't wipe out the Hamas, the opposite, we free more terrorists, what have we done? We've just endangered the nation of Israel even more because these bastards are still walking around. And even people who learn Torah are taken aback sometimes by the concept of vengeance. But we have to understand when it comes to Torah concepts versus modern Western concepts, that is when we compare the Torah to the present humanist woke philosophies of today, we should remember the words of the Chazon Ish, the Ben-Gurion. There was a great rabbi called the Chazon Ish, and he met with Prime Minister Ben-Gurion, the first Prime Minister of Israel, and he said like this, let's say you have this narrow one-lane road, and you have two trucks on this road coming from different directions, and they're going to meet head-on. Somebody's got to get out of the way. Somebody's got to move to the side. So which one of them is going to yield to avoid a collision? So according to the Talmud, the empty truck has to move aside for the more loaded truck. Obviously, in the Talmud, they're not talking about trucks. Maybe they're talking about donkeys, but it's the same principle that the empty truck has to move aside for the loaded truck. And the parallel is that Judaism and the Jewish traditions, they've been around a lot longer than all this new woke garbage. The woke truck, it's a garbage truck. The Judaism truck is loaded with a cargo of 2,000 years of wisdom that's proven itself. The garbage truck, the Western truck, with its fleeting trends, it's empty. And it has to give the right of way to the loaded truck. And so don't get mixed up, because a lot of these foreign concepts have entered the halls of Torah as well. I want to speak about something you probably hear very little about, unless you're listening to news from HaKol Yehuda, the Jewish voice, or maybe Arut Sheva covers this a bit. And that's the Israeli authorities' crackdown on their constant harassment and persecution of what they call the far-right Israeli settlers. Whether they're doing this to throw a bone to Biden or whether they're just Jewish anti-Semites, they are targeting these nationalist settlers, the boys on the hilltops of Israel. Take, for example, the situation of a young man named Ariel Danino. He was placed in administrative detention for 3 months, and recently the Shin Bet and the Israeli defense minister extended his time in jail for another 3 months. Now, if you don't know what administrative detention is, this is something from the British mandate where they throw you in jail without a charge, without a trial. So Israel, which goes by Goyer Shalom, they apply this too. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Ariel Danino and what he did. He's a resident of the settlement of Yitzhar, which already makes him an automatic target. So Ariel Danino, he's always been an activist for the Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria, and he's very active. What he specializes in is monitoring the Arab social media online, where he monitors what the Arabs are planning and what they're saying. And after the October 7th massacre, he opened up a war room, like a central command center, to closely monitor what the Arabs are saying on Instagram and other social media platforms. And he was tracking the Arabs in the area. Remember, after October 7th, everybody was expecting a similar attack in Sudan, Samaria, because what they did in Gaza, they could do anywhere. So he was tracking in real time their online activities and passing that info onto the IDF. He was passing the info onto Israeli security to give him a heads up of what's brewing on the ground. So why was he arrested? And why is he being held in a detention center for security prisoners where Arab terrorists are held? In Megiddo or Tziot, way up north. I mean, we're talking about places, hole in the ground. That's where they're keeping him. Now, the Shin Bet is claiming that he was involved in violent actions in the area of Shechem. But he wasn't arrested for any violent rioting. He wasn't caught rioting. There's no evidence about that. He's not one of those guys who rampages through Arab villages. Not that I'm condemning that. But he's something else. He's pretty well known in the area. And like I said, he's been keeping an eye on what Israel's enemies are saying on social media. That's his thing. So what irritates them? Because he's not sitting back. Because he's taking action. He's taking initiative. He's showing people what's really going on in the Arab sector, all the hostility and the danger they pose. And that rubs the Israeli security forces the wrong way. They're after him because they see him as a guy who stirs things up. He's a leader. He's shedding light on stuff they'd like to keep quiet. So yeah, he becomes a major target for the authorities because he's trying to expose the truth. And so we see that the Shin Bet continues with its conception, even after the massacre. Doesn't matter to them. They continue with that same mindset. You got to fight against our Jewish brothers instead of against the enemy. Now, Ariel Danino is just one example. A few days ago, another 5 Jewish settlers were given administrative detention warrants by Defense Minister Gallant. What do they do? Well, if you remember, I talked about this a couple weeks ago. Following the murder of the 14-year-old Israeli teen, Binyamin Achimer, right, in the hills of Binyamin, he was murdered by an Arab. He was a Jewish shepherd, murdered by an Arab. And these boys allegedly went into these Arab villages and did some damage. Now, don't ever condemn them, and I'll tell you why. When you feel that your blood is hefker, when you don't know when you're going to get shot at, whether your kid's going to get kidnapped or beaten or his head smashed in with a rock by some Arab. And let's face it, the IDF can't really protect the settlers. I mean, I think October 7th proved that. So of course you have to start taking proactive measures, especially after the murder of a Jew. You have to show them that Jewish blood isn't cheap. You can't just sit back and take it. You have to show them that if they harm a Jew, there's going to be repercussions. Nobody wants to take the law into their own hands. The question arises, though, is what do you do when the sovereign governmental body, the ones who are supposed to wipe out the Chilul Hashem, the ones who are supposed to take the vengeance against the enemies and protect us, what happens when they're, for whatever reason, incapable or don't want to, or just refuses for whatever reason to wipe out this Chilul Hashem? What are you supposed to do when the IDF isn't stopping the Arab terror against the Jewish residents? Then, of course, the settlers have to do something to make the Arabs pay. Anyway, these 5 Jewish settlers are suspected of taking part in reprisals against Arabs following the murder of Binyamin Achimer. And it used to be that they would use the administrative detention warrant sparingly. Every once in a while, you'd see somebody get an administrative detention. Like, it would be rare. But now they hand them out like candy. Yeah, administrative detention warrants. No charge, no trial, jail without bail. That's it. That's what they did to these 5 settlers. They're sitting in jail on administrative detention. Now, if you want to help Danino or any one of these boys, most of them are married with families. There's a fund that's been set up, but I don't know how to pass it on to you without using WhatsApp. So if you want to help out, you contact me by phone. My phone number is 050-666-9490, which would become, I guess, 972-50-666-9490. Take that down. Send me a WhatsApp and I'll try to pass on to you the WhatsApp link for the GoFundMe that's been set up. Let's not leave these kids hanging. Moving on. Today, Monday, it's Holocaust Day, where we have Holocaust celebrations. I call them celebrations, you know, cynically, because we're not learning from our past. We're repeating it. We're allowing the modern day Nazis to live and thrive. We send the Ishmaelite Nazis of today hundreds of trucks with food and medicine and gas, and then we go and reminisce about the Holocaust. So we're reminiscing about the Holocaust, and we have another one brewing right under our nose. It's a Holocaust of Ishmael, a Holocaust of axes and knives and rape and tearing of limbs and burning babies. But yeah, let's keep talking about the one that happened 80 years ago. Now, of course you're supposed to remember, but you remember in order to learn the lessons. When King David lamented over King Saul and Jonathan, who fell in battle, and it was a national tragedy, the famous song, Ech Naflu Giborim, How the Mighty Have Fallen, how does he open it up? He opens up with the words, Lelamed Yehuda Keshet, to teach Yehuda how to shoot. That's how he opens his eulogy, his lamentation. Because the theme of his Sekinah of his lamentation is that we don't want a repeat of this. We have to learn how to shoot. We don't want any more dead Jews and Holocausts. L'lamed Yehuda Keshet. That's the lesson King David wants to impart. That's the first thing he says before he even starts his eulogy. And one of the things we always used to hear on Holocaust Day, some government official or military man, he makes a speech and he declares, the state of Israel came a few years too late. If there was a state of Israel and an IDF, this wouldn't have happened. I wonder what they'll say now after October 7th. And today on the radio, I heard one of the politicians or some talking head, he said that at least the IDF came. It took 7 hours for them to come on October 7th, but at least they came. During the Holocaust in Europe, there was no IDF to come at all to the rescue in the first place. And so I guess we could take solace in that. I would take a lot more solace if the IDF did its job of wiping out the enemy before the massacre takes place. How about stopping the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, and be the IOF, the Israel Offense Forces? Anyway, there's a fantastic shiur that Rabbi Binyamin Zev Kahane gave on the Holocaust. It's called Confronting the Holocaust. It was a shiur he gave in the yeshiva, and we wrote it down into a booklet. And I think it's really important because we know that the Holocaust has been covered from every angle possible, but it's worthwhile to get the Kahane angle on the Holocaust, the true unfiltered angle. And what the shiur basically does is that it addresses the questions that everybody asks. Where was God? And I'm not going to get into it. It's a must read. If you want me to send it to you, email me at LennyGoldberg40@gmail.com. LennyGoldberg40@gmail.com, and I'll send it to you. It's a small booklet. I guarantee you'll finish it in one reading and you will be enlightened. I want to close with part of a lecture that Rabbi Meir Kahane gave. This was actually his final speech before he was murdered. It's his last speech. He was murdered right after finishing this speech on November 5th, 1990. After the speech, the people came up to him to ask questions. And during that time, he was shot. And in this speech, the rabbi is urging the Jews to leave the exile before the impending tragedy. He's speaking in the Marriott Hotel in New York, and he calls it an emergency Aliyah meeting. You gotta make Aliyah before, God forbid, everything implodes. And I want to play just a small segment of it where he speaks of the growing anti-Semitism in America, and he speaks of how the rise of a strong Israel has washed away the guilt of the Holocaust, as he calls it. And the anti-Semitism is back in style because Israel's strong now. And at the beginning, what I'm going to play, he speaks of how the exile of America, it's not better than it was in Spain or Babylon. Those are also very comfortable exiles that lasted a long time, but they ended just like the American exile is going to end for the Jew. Now, the sound is not great. It's not the greatest sound, so you have to really listen carefully. Now, remember, this is 1990. And he's talking about how Israel is being criticized for committing genocide against the Arabs in Israel. And all the things we hear today, of course, when the rabbi said this, it wasn't on the same level it is today, but the rabbi always saw the tip of the iceberg. He saw the trend and he knew what the narrative was going to be. Now, again, the audio quality is not good, so bear with it and make an effort to listen to every word as Rabbi Kahane now speaks about anti-Semitism in America.
Galut is a punishment, it is a tragedy, it is suffering, and the fact that we may go for 200 or 300 years in a particular country and not suffer, there's nothing new about that. You think that the Jews in Spain did live much, much longer in a good life than the American Jews? Of course they did. You think that Jews in Babylon did not live much, much longer? Of course they did. But eventually it ends because that is what the exile is per se by its very nature. First of all, we have seen the death of what I call the Auschwitz syndrome. What is the Auschwitz syndrome? After World War II, it was hard to be an anti-Semite, even for an anti-Semite. But then the years passed. And a generation arose that was not born at that time. And the Auschwitz syndrome began to fade away. And the guilt began to fade away. And no matter how many Holocaust programs were put on television, every year they have less and less impact. Indeed, they reach a point whereby they encourage anti-Semitism. It fades away, and it's part of helping them to fade away was, of course, the rise of a strong Israel. Suddenly, Israel was winning, and that allowed the anti-Semite to cut the albatross. Now it was okay. You see, the Jews are Nazis, and they pursue the Palestinians, and now it was okay. So the Auschwitz syndrome faded. And you hear people speaking about the Holocaust that the Israelis are perpetrating on the Palestinians. To all the Israelis and all the Jews who ever called me a Nazi and didn't realize that when you call a Jew a Nazi, you cheapen the Holocaust.
That was Rabbi Meir Kahana, and those again were his final words before being shot. And we turned this last speech of his into a booklet. It's a tremendous speech. We called the booklet, "So You Shoot the Messenger." Why did we call it "So You Shoot the Messenger"? Because in his speech, he explains how people don't want to hear the message. So they blame the messenger, and he actually said those words, "So you shoot the messenger," because you don't want to hear the message. And you can order this last speech from me. It's a pretty amazing and prophetic piece. Email me at LennyGoldberg40@gmail.com. LennyGoldberg40, two N's in Lenny, the number 40, LennyGoldberg40@gmail.com. And I'll send it out to you. It costs $10 plus postage. I don't know how much the postage will be. It should be less than the Haggadah was because it's a small booklet. It's very light. But believe me, every word is gold and prophetic. So order this great book, "So You Shoot the Messenger." And if you're ordering that, include as well Confronting the Holocaust, the book I just talked about. And I'll send you both those books, Confronting the Holocaust and You Shoot the Messenger. These are two really important lectures that nobody really knows about. Nobody has these books. So order with me at LennyGoldberg40@gmail.com. I don't have that many of them. So get your order in, and I'll be back next week, God willing, for more Jewish truth.
Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.